I'm in the commodity business at the end of the day. This is hard. I'm basically living on price, which is a very difficult business. When I got to Sky, I saw a very different business. So what was happening there was we were creating a product, or my uncle created a product that people loved. Like the product delivered. It was really good quality. It had a beautiful package. People were proud to put on their bar, and they were loyal.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Everyone wants to make a difference, right? We want to create value and be valued. But that's not always easy to do in business. Sometimes the industry you're in can shift. One day you're providing a valuable service to your client. The next day, your entire industry becomes commoditized. Your clients no longer see you as special, and instead just see you as one more person making the same old thing. At that point, all you can do is compete on price, or you can do something else entirely. You can walk away and create something entirely new. That's what David Cambart did. He was a mortgage broker who sold his business and walked away from it all. And with no plan, left New York for San Francisco for what he thought would be a two-week vacation to spend time with his uncle Maurice, who at the time had recently launched Sky Vodka. His two quick weeks became 6 months as he worked on different business ideas while also absorbing all he could about the spirits business from Maurice, which he found fascinating. When the person running Sky left the company, Maurice gave David the opportunity of a lifetime to dive right into management at Sky. After 5 years of learning the business and after Maurice sold the business to Campari, he went off on his own to start his own spirits brand. One of the first brands was Bulldog Gin, which was eventually sold to Campari. Then he did it with Skinny Girl Margarita, which he co-founded with Bethany Frankel, which they then sold to Jim Beam for a reported $100 million after only 18 months on the market. Now he's working on a new project with actress Kate Hudson. It's a vodka brand called King Street, and it's so new that when we talked earlier this summer, he couldn't even say its name or mention his partner on microphone. So in our conversation, when you hear him say he's working on a special project, that's what it is. So how do you know when to leave one business and jump into something new? It's an important question, and most entrepreneurs will have to ask it over and over again. So to find out, I went to Cambart's apartment in Manhattan, where we sat down at his dining room table to talk about making a big change and a big impact. So I really wanted to know how you leave one business and start something entirely new. Because David Cambart didn't just do that, he did it, and did it successfully. How is that possible? So as we settled in, that's what I started by asking him. How does a guy like him go from selling mortgages to selling booze?
Well, it was purely by accident. I was in the mortgage business. I liked the real estate industry, and I ended up in the mortgage business. So what happened was after I sold the mortgage business, I was single. I was, you know, living in New York. There wasn't a lot keeping me in New York. My uncle, who was living in San Francisco at the time and a really successful entrepreneur and inventor, and he was always working on interesting things, I figured I'm going to go out to San Francisco for a change of scenery and spend time out there. So we went out there, and at the time, he was starting up a business now, you know, which a lot of people know now, but is back then was just a startup, was Sky Spirits, which is, you know, the owner and marketer of Sky Vodka. So I went out there and I started talking to him about the brand and about the business. And I found myself getting more and more fascinated by it. And, you know, he'd pull me into marketing meetings and he'd pull me into a meeting with the glass people. And I just found the whole process very interesting, the whole business really interesting.
And you knew nothing about liquor, right? You were coming from selling mortgages.
I mean, other than drinking it, no. So I didn't know anything about how the business operated, but I started learning as I was there. And my what was going to be 2 weeks then became 6 months in San Francisco. And the person he had running the business left, and I got a lot more involved in running the business. Really, me and the CFO got very involved in the day-to-day operations of the business. And that's when I really learned a lot, mostly from the sales and marketing side. Finance, we had a really great CFO. So I kind of understood finance at a 30,000-foot level. I understood nothing about production because it's not an area that I actually got involved in at all. And I started learning a lot more about the nuts and bolts of sales and marketing. And what I really took away from Sky, what I really discovered there that I realized I didn't have in the mortgage business. And I could tell you a story about the mortgage business to kind of contrast what it's like to be in the branded consumer business.
Right. Different
which
business.
Was, I remember when I started out in the mortgage business, rates were at 10% for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. I know that's hard for anybody to believe now, but that's what rates were.
That sounds horrible.
And they didn't change. I mean, every day the new rate sheet came in, 10%, 10%, 10%. It was very, very stable. The rates were very stable and very high. So whatever happened, I can't remember honestly what caused rates to come down. I think it might have been, maybe it was a recession. The Fed started lowering rates considerably. And as rates came down, I started getting a lot of customers. People started buying homes. They started refinancing their mortgages. And there were people that I refinanced 3, 4, 5 times. So I remember very distinctly a customer had a $500,000 mortgage, and I had already refinanced them 3 times. And I went in for the 4th refinancing, and he said, "That's great. Send me a quote." So I did, and never heard from him again. And I followed up again, never heard from the guy. And finally, I did connect with him, and he told me he'd gone to another company. I said, "Oh, was this somebody you knew?" And he said, "No, I found them in the paper." I was like, "Well, why'd you go to them?" He said, "Well, because they were 1/8 of a point cheaper." Now, I'm not talking about 1/8 on the rate, which is going to live with you for the rest right. of your life. I'm talking about 1/8 of a point that you pay at closing. This amounted to $625. So it's like this guy was ready to leave me after having successfully. And by the way, this guy raved about my service. He sent me customers. He told me I was great and all that. And yet he left me for $600.
And so, you realize you could never make a difference.
Yeah,
I'm
in the commodity business at the end of the day. This is hard. I'm basically living on price, which is a very difficult business. When I got to Sky, I saw a very different business. So what was happening there was we were creating a product, or my uncle created a product that people loved. Like the product delivered, it was really good quality. It had a beautiful package. People were proud to put on their bar, and they were loyal.
But I recall with Sky, and there was this thing about the branding being you would drink it, and supposedly you wouldn't get hungover.
Right. So my uncle, being an inventor, actually discovered that. Well, it wasn't his discovery, but he found there was lots of research on the cause of hangovers, and a major cause of hangovers were impurities. So he created a vodka that was extremely, extremely low impurities. So it was essentially a very clean vodka. And yes, it was a lot less likely to give you a hangover than any other vodka in the market at the time, for sure. And to this day, I think it actually is, you know, a pretty good vodka. So, you know, in any case, what I learned from that was that we had a really loyal customer. They bought the brand because they liked it. They kept buying it because we, you know, delivered on a really good product with a really nice package and a good price. It wasn't a discounted price, but it was a premium price, but people were happy to pay it because they were getting what they wanted. And that spoke to me. I realized now this is the kind of business I want to be in. These customers were buying our brand. They were giving it as gifts. They were telling their friends, and the business grew out of real just loyalty from our consumers, our customers.
Right. And you felt that at that point with working with a consumer brand, there's something tangible there. And you end up, so you're at Sky Vodka. How long are you there for until you then decide to strike out on your own?
Right. So I was there about 4.5, 5 years. The brand had been sold to Campari. And I decided, look, I didn't have any equity in Sky. So I decided I would go off on my own and start a business, which is really historically what I'd always done. I mean, as you know, we've known each other a long time. I have always been in some business or another. I mean, the mortgage business was one of them, but even in college, I had a business, and high school, I had a business, and so on. So it was something I was always probably destined to do in any case. So once Sky was sold to Campari, and it started becoming pretty big and corporate, I decided I was going to strike out on my own. And that's when I started a super premium white rum called Bamboo.
And you were thinking, look, let's do for rum what we did in the vodka category with Sky, with a premium brand.
Right. So not only what was going on with Sky, but if you remember Absolut, and you remember Grey Goose and Kettle One and Belvedere, these were all kind of super premium brands. The whole category is premiumizing, right? And tequila, the same thing, right? When we were in college, it was Cuervo Gold, and then it became Patron Silver, and that was really the gold standard, right? The Patron guys really created the super premium tequila category. So I felt like, okay, whatever what's happening there should happen in rum. And I liked rum. I drank mojitos, so I felt like that should happen in rum. And what I learned very quickly is what I was trying to do was create a category that didn't exist. Now, Patron did that, but it took them a lot of time, and they had the time to do it. I mean, I didn't. So I think I'm going to say that it took maybe Patron 10 years. Right. I don't know
and
exactly.
You're starting Bamboo, and you really, You don't have a stack of cash, right? Behind you and really time. You really want to go make your mark. So you decide to start Bamboo and you tell yourself, I'm going to start this, but I'm going to make sure that I'm involved in every aspect of the business. Now, why was that important?
Right. So I was involved. What happened was when I started Bamboo, I didn't have a lot of money, as you pointed out. I mean, I had to do everything myself. And also, I felt like I should do everything myself. I mean, that was you really should understand every aspect of the business. That's something that both my dad and my uncle had both taught me. Said, you really want to make sure you understand every aspect of your business. So I managed production. I even took a couple of accounting courses so I can do my own books. So I kind of tried to get involved in everything. I didn't do my books forever, but the point is I at least could, even when I had a bookkeeper, I was able to manage that bookkeeper because I knew how to do it myself. And with production, again, I learned how to do all that myself. And I think that was really important. Even though Bamboo wasn't successful, that brand completely failed, I learned a lot from that whole experience. And likewise, so when I got involved with Bulldog, what I saw there was something different. I saw it as being disruptive from a brand perspective to the gin category, which has already existed. So I said to myself, right after Bamboo, I said, I think what I really need to be doing is disrupting existing categories. Because right. That's so the only way I'm going to be able to get to scale in a reasonable amount of time.
And that's what you took. You took from Bamboo something where you said you failed, but you took that learning and then you applied it with your next venture, which...
Right, which helped me with Bulldog. Yeah, which helped me a lot with Bulldog for sure. And then that experience with Bulldog, and then even I had subsequent brands to that. I had a coconut cream liqueur that did okay. And all that learning that I had, and plus, again, doing everything myself. I didn't hire anybody to do this for me. I did everything myself. I called the glass people myself. I sourced the liquid myself. I dealt with the branding agencies myself, the graphic designers. I mean, I did everything from the ground up. So when I wound up in business with Bethany, first of all, you know.
Well, tell us how, yeah. Because this is really important stuff where you learned all of this and then you get this opportunity, like you said, with right. Bethany Frankel. And one of the reasons she chooses to work with you is because she knows you've done everything, you know everything, and you only have 6 months.
We knew we had a very short window because we had the next season of Housewives coming out. So, and we knew we were going to try and position on the show that was going to be a great marketing platform.
That was your marketing plan. That was going to really make the brand take off.
Right. So we really wanted to get it off to the market as soon as possible. I mean, season two had just kicked off when we signed our deal and we need to get up and running by the time season three came on, which was a year from when we signed, which basically meant that we had probably 6 months to get it to market because you still have to get it into retail. So, you know, it's not like it happens overnight. So basically we had a very short window to get this done. And I think all of the experience that I gained from my prior businesses and from Sky was how to hit the ground running the minute she and I signed our deal. And I woke up every morning knowing exactly what I need to do to get this brand to market. And that's where, you know, my learnings had come in real handy.
And what did you have to do initially when you guys, you know, you're launching this brand, it's got to be put together quickly. What is the first thing you do and what do you target? And why did you target margaritas or skinny girl margaritas?
Well, that was Bethany's idea. I mean, basically when I was approached with the idea by one of Bethany's people, her agent at the time, he said to me that we're looking for a liquor industry partner. Bethany wants to launch her Skinny Girl Margarita. And quite frankly, I hadn't even heard of it yet. I hadn't watched the show. There was only a pilot season of six episodes. But the second he told me the name, I said, whoa, hold on. What is that? A low-calorie margarita? And he said, yeah. I said, that's amazing. That's a big white space. No one's doing low-calorie margaritas. And women, like my wife, very rarely drank margaritas because they were so high in calories. And I said, there's got to be a lot of women who don't want to drink who would like to have a low-calorie margarita. So that made sense to me. And I thought the name was genius. So Bethany really had the idea and the name. And with that, I felt like I had something really I can work with. And from there, we developed the packaging, we sourced the liquid, we got it out to distribution, we set up the social media pages, which was not in its early stages, but it was still something. You know, it wasn't a platform yet that you can build a brand on, but it was you definitely needed social media. So we did that, got the website up and running, and the branding was important too, the messaging.
Right. So you basically took everything you had learned from Sky with the branding, marketing, sales, everything you learned with Bulldog, everything you worked with, you know, or learned from Bamboo, And it really all came together in this moment, because what happens with Skinny Girl? It seems like all of a sudden it just blew up. And was it overnight or what happened?
It wasn't overnight, but it was pretty quick. I mean, it took about 7 months to hit our tipping point. And I remember going that first 7 months, I was actually surprised that it hadn't caught on bigger yet, because Bethany had been talking about it in the press and wherever she could. She was great at promoting it.
I mean, were you worried at that point that maybe, this might not?
Yeah, really didn't know how big this was going to be, but I was starting to get worried that maybe this wasn't going to be as big as I thought. I mean, I was surprised that it hadn't taken off sooner. Even though 7 months is a very short period of time for any business, still, given all the promotion that Bethany had been doing, I really thought for sure that it would have taken off sooner. But after about 7 months and it being featured on the show, and I remember the one weekend where it was on the show, and for whatever reason, that's when the whole country sort of, it registered with the whole country. They could buy this in a store. You know, they'd heard Bethany talking about it, but I think they just, for whatever reason, the customers thought that, or the viewers thought that this was just a recipe that you ask for in a bar or that you make at home. But I don't think they really realized until one particular episode where she was tasting the other housewives on it, that this was something you could buy in a store. And that weekend, the entire country ran out of stock. And I remember the very first call I got from my distributor in Georgia, a guy named Rick called me and said, David, what'd you do? I said, what do you mean? It was Monday morning. I don't know what he was talking about.
And thinking, what did I do on the weekend?
Yeah.
And then
he said, David,
game?
The whole state's out of stock. I need a container. And it was like, all right, you know, and that was the first of many calls like that. For some reason that weekend, it just hit a tipping point.
Wow.
And so, I mean, that year, if I remember correctly, it was a while ago, but I think we closed the year. I mean, I think I don't know how much volume we did in March, but it was not a lot. And that year, I'm going to say it was in the hundreds of cases probably. And that year we sold, I think, 150,000 cases. So it took off that fast. Yeah.
And that was the first year.
That was the first year. And it was our first full year in business. And then, you know, Beam came calling and they actually, and we made a deal with Beam to sell. And
how did that happen? Did they just, what was it that they saw, or what was their interest in you know, why did they approach it?
I can't speak for them, but I think it certainly made sense for their portfolio. I mean, I think they already had tequila in their portfolio. Yeah, I mean, we were aligned with distributors. They had tequila in their portfolio. If you looked at sort of their whole portfolio, the product seemed to fit pretty well there. I mean, I can't speak for why they did it, but it made sense to me that they were the buyer.
Yeah, I think at the time, one of their executives had said there's never been a spirit as successful of any major scale that's low calorie, like Skinny Girl Margarita.
Right.
So,
I think it was the only one. I mean, I think it was the first one. Yeah. So that wasn't a difficult part.
I guess
that
makes it easy.
Yeah. I think it was the only one. It's the only one I knew of. Others followed, though.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors.
How success happens. It's the name of this podcast, but it also describes the process of starting a business with the goal of helping people live happier, healthier lives. I'm talking about MindBody. For almost 20 years, they've been linking hundreds of thousands of passionate health, wellness, and beauty professionals to the millions of clients they serve. MindBody understands that taking care of yourself means something different for everyone, and that's why they're committed to connecting millions of customers to a huge selection of local fitness classes, massage and acupuncture, salons and spas, and they find, book, and pay all in one app. You can partner with them by listing your business at mindbodyonline.com/success. MindBody, the solution to grow and manage every detail of your business and customer experience. mindbodyonline.com/success.
And we're back.
And now, thinking about it and selling, when you look back, were you happy about selling the business at that time? Do you think you could have built it further, or was it the right timing?
No, I think it was the right time. I mean, I think Beam did a great job building it, and it grew, I think, the following year to 700,000 cases or something, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, they did a great job with it. But, you know, the truth is, when you're offered a good amount of money for a lot of money, really, for 18 months of work,
yeah.
By turning it down, you're effectively taking that money and betting that this is going to continue. And, you know, look, I felt like it would continue, but at the same time, it was a really big risk to take for me, the bulk of my net worth was in this business. So I was a little nervous about it, you know, going, and I had a family and all that. So I said, you know, this is probably the financially responsible thing to do.
Yeah, totally, totally understandable. So now tell me about, you have this major success, and then In the last few years, you have really, what I see, gone out and created a new entity, which I'll let you talk about,
sure,
that's going to work with a lot of brands. But it really going back to that point of you achieving success and why. And I think with this new business, you're really kind of putting that all together, all your knowledge from all of these places. And tell us about this new business that you recently launched and some of the products that you kind of have put into motion.
So I started a company called Brand House. And the idea being that this was going to be more than just a one-off. We build a brand and we sell it. What I really wanted to do is build a business that was a little bit more long-term. That's not to say we're not going to build a business or a brand and sell it, but I do want to have a portfolio of brands that we can maintain that supports an infrastructure, that supports continued innovation without having to start all over again. Because one of the hard parts about Skinny Girl and having sold Skinny Girl was that I had to start all over again. And that was hard. I mean, you know, even though I'd been in the business and I knew all the players, but still starting from zero again is very difficult. And I really didn't want to go through that again. So I decided I wanted to build a business like Brand House where I would work with generally other entrepreneurs, but mostly celebrities, I think. But it also, I'm very open to working with other entrepreneurs and also creating brands internally. I created one brand internally that just launched, and I have another brand launching on August 1 with a celebrity, and I'll get into that in a minute. And then another brand that comes out a few months later, which I can't talk about yet. But basically, that was the idea, is like bringing my knowledge of how to bring products to market, building a sales force that can support that innovation, and also providing capital. So it's sort of a one-stop shop, if you will, for new brand development. It's almost like an incubator and a venture capitalist and a distributor all in the same company.
Exactly. Taking the knowledge, doing it now, working with entrepreneurs, celebrities. So tell us about a couple of the brands you can talk about.
Sure.
That you're getting ready to launch or have launched.
Right. So I just launched a brand of rosé called Naughty French. I never really thought I would actually get into the rosé business. Because I'd really, you know, historically been primarily a spirits guy. So what happened was a couple summers ago, I was in a liquor store and I saw a sea of rosés as you normally see in the New York metropolitan area in the middle of summer, right? And what hit me was that there are a lot of labels rather, but very few brands. And what I mean by that is there were a lot of labels that people didn't really know what they were buying. I mean, they bought, it was on display. It might be a Côte de Provence rosé and it was $17.99 and they just bought it because it was there. But they weren't really paying that close attention to the obscure French name on the label. They probably couldn't remember what it was. If they could even pronounce it, they couldn't,
exactly.
They couldn't remember it. I mean, there were a couple of brands. There are a couple of brands out there like Whispering Angel and Miraval, but they're very serious brands.
Yeah. Naughty French, you will remember.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, so I said, you know, if I can come up with a really good name that is fun, because no, in my mind, Whispering Angel is a great brand and Miraval is a great brand, but they're very serious. And I said, you know, I want to have some fun in this category. So I said, if I can come up with a fun name, I did. And I did. So Naughty French was the name I came up with. There's lots of plays on naughty. So like we have point of sale that says things like, if he's naughty, tie him up. If not, cut him loose.
Right.
You know, or dear Santa, I know Christmas is months away, but I went with naughty.
Right.
You know,
back to your Sky Vodka branding days, right?
Yeah,
drawing on,
I mean, not so much
experience.
Focused on the product like we were with Sky, but a little bit more on just sort of having some fun. But yeah, I'd say it's probably a little bit more like Skinny Girl in the sense that we're having a little fun with it. And then the other brand I came out with, well, it was coming out August 1, is a brand called Courage and Stone, which is a old fashioned and a Manhattan in a bottle. And that's actually made in Brooklyn. And I did that. It's actually the brainchild of Aisha Tyler. I don't know if you know Aisha. Yeah, exactly. So she's been on The Talk. She's on Archer. Criminal Minds. She was actually Ross Geller's girlfriend for a season, I think, on Friends.
Right, well,
so
that's...
she's done a lot. She's an award-winning writer and director. But most importantly, at least in this context, she's a cocktail nut. She's really an enthusiast about cocktails, and her fan base know that. And this is a really, what I loved about this is that it's so authentic, because Aisha has one of these really impressive bars at home. And she makes cocktails and she's into it. And if she, you know, she goes to the best cocktail bars and she tries to find great bartenders and mixologists. And I mean, that it just really is a big part of her life.
Which is so important as, you know, an entrepreneur and in finding your product and being authentic, I think is, you know.
The authenticity is critical. I mean, that's why with Skinny Girl, it was so successful because it was so authentic. It really came out of Bethany's work as a chef who focused on taking the foods and drinks that we liked and making lower calorie versions of them that were still delicious. That was what she was doing and still, to some extent, still does. But that was why that brand was so authentic. It was really created from her heart and soul. With Aisha, this brand is created very much from her heart and soul.
And now for your going forward and other products, a big focus might be on partnering with celebrities?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure in some cases, yes. In some cases, not necessarily. But yeah, if it makes sense, you know, I think the authenticity, again, is extremely important. So, you know, there's a lot of celebrities that want to get into this business, particularly after, you know, George Clooney.
Casamigos, yeah. Right? And everyone wants to, everyone you know, make their... $1 billion.
Exactly.
And, so, was that a once-in-a-lifetime thing? Or
no,
is that really, is that possible with other celebrities? Or
I think so. I think it is for sure. But I think it's the number of celebrities that can probably pull it off are probably limited. But I think it's a combination of the right celebrity with the right persona, with the right category and the authenticity. And it's got to all,
right.
The stars all have to align for it to work.
And
you know?
You felt Clooney obviously was authentic in
for
terms
sure.
of...
Yeah, I mean, listen, he and Randy were legitimately friends.
That's Randy Gerber.
Randy Gerber. Right, they were legitimately friends. They lived next door to each other in Cabo. They had houses there. They drank tequila together. I mean, it was an authentic story. I mean, no question about it. I mean, people understood that.
Yeah, no, that's super important. So moving ahead in terms of these products, are you, I guess, coming out? Are you excited? Are you going to be jumping on some other opportunities? Is this a lot on your plate right now?
Yeah.
Obviously,
it's a lot on my plate. And I think for now, I'm good. I think the three brands are enough, more than enough, frankly. So yeah, these two brands that I mentioned, Naughty French and Courage and Stone, plus the new brand that's coming out probably in the fall. So they're, yeah, I mean, I've got a lot on my plate. I think right now I'm not really actively looking for new products. I've got enough to do.
Yeah, well, hopefully we're going to see another success, which I am sure we will from you, like Skinny Girl and one of these products. But thanks so much, Dave, for coming on the show and super interesting. And obviously, we're going to keep rooting for you.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me.
Got it.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. Or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman. Or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business. Or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.